There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 997, June 19th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say, video killed the radio star in free practice one. Max gets a birdie, Red Bull gets a century. We do a Texas two-step on the show today, and moi is a free birdie. We shall explain, gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, the Max train keeps on rolling down the road and winning every race. Fernando and LCH, two old geezers chasing Max. Where is Sargent compared to Albon, folks? Come on! And Lando Norris's feelings hurt by the FIA. And this week's interviews, IndyCar drivers Benjamin Peterson and Santino Ferrucci. He is one crazy guy, and Nas will have all the details in the podcast. And I have to remind everybody, because we want to survive, we will survive. We need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the support F1 Weekly, you know, you want to. And all we ask, a buck a podcast, folks. Come on. There's nothing more fair than a buck a podcast. Thank you, sir. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you after that Canadian extravaganza?
I am doing mighty fine, Thank you for asking. How is the host on the left coast?
I am blown away. So we're on podcast 997. This all started in 05. And the gentleman that I'm rooting for is still getting on the podium in 2023. I mean, we're talking an amazing situation, especially since we've seen so many drivers come and go in our careers, Nasser. So I'm pretty elated. You got Fernando performing, everybody. We have Stroll. That's a very interesting yin and yang thing going on there. I don't know what they're going to do at Aston Martin, but for me, what do they do with Stroll? And of course, it's really simple. Is Schumacher going to go to Williams to replace Sargent?
Well, time will tell, sir. But in 14 years, Red Bull has gone from win number one in Shanghai 2009 with their original wunderkind Sebastian Vettel to 100 wins in Montreal with their new Max Factor. The Flying Dutchman is responsible for 41 of those 100 wins. And you know, Mr. Adrian Newey, the guru of aerodynamics, this was his win number 200. So these people have just ganged up on the competition. Now, alluding to what you said, this is not the only team where we are seeing this movie. This quality Quinn Martin production high-speed drama is also being played out at Aston Martin, like you said. One hombre regularly on the podium, while teammates' claim to fame is, my name is on the building. And the podium in Montreal was very impressive. Max, the present and future of Formula One, Alonso Hamilton, 176 wins among the top three. And this podium, you know, it was in the same league as seeing Senna, Prost and Schumacher on the same podium. So absolutely marvelous. And you know, the Red Bull team has won all 8 races so far this season. The score is Max 6, Checo 2, no surprise here. As Christian Horner said over the weekend, Checo should forget about the title, just drive the car. And, you know, I have to agree with him. And Mr. Rogers, looks like we've seen it all by now, in all the time we have been podcasting and living. And, you know, interesting, in the time since we started, or you started, I was homie come lately. We have seen talents like Sebastian Vettel come and make their impressive debut, and then win 4 championships in a row, and then retire from racing. And El Machismo is still going on like Santa Fe freight train. So very, very impressive. So what we have seen here in all these years, sessions have been affected from dust and rainstorms to advertising billboard falling on our favorite Jean Alesi's car to CCTV going kaput in Canada. But you know, this is Formula One, anything is possible. And one thing I thought was not possible this year happened. On a personal note, this is my first full week of being put out to pasture by corporate America, and I am loving it. Pretty soon I will be grazing the green fields of motorsports from Watkins Glen to Albert Park. Wheels are in motion, and to borrow a phrase from Miss Roberta Flack, feel like making dreams come true. So that should be very, very exciting, and we'll have some more information in the next few podcasts. Now, going back to racing reality, we have Max doing what he does best, stampeding the competition with his raging Red Bull and matching same number of wins, 41, as Ayrton Senna da Silva. Not bad for a 25-year-old kid who was racing at a karting event in the parking lot of Rio Hotel in Vegas in 2012. Time sure flies, so do some drivers. Sir, let's do a quickie on Collie. May I proceed with your express written text?
Pedro is always on my mind.
Yes, he is. Thank you, sir. Collie, rain or shine, Max will do mighty fine, qualifying for his pole position number 25 by over a second on another rainmeister, Nico Hülkenberg. But Nico got a fine for speeding under red flag. And let me tell you about Nico Hülkenberg. It's sad that he never got into a top team. If anybody goes to YouTube and punch in Sepang, I think it was 2005 or 2006, A1 GP race, his performance in that rain was no different than Senna in Portugal 1985 and Spain in 1996, you know, Michael Schumacher's first Ferrari win. So Nico, and you know, if you remember, his first pole in Brazil was also in changing conditions. Three other drivers also got 3 place grid penalties for impeding other drivers. Sainz Jr., local lad and hardest working man in Formula One, that would be Lance Stroll, and Yuki Tsunoda. No surprise here. So who do we have on the front row with Max for the start of the race? The Max of bygone era, Machismo. And if you put him in the Red Bull, he will be Max of the future also. Row 2 was his BFF, LCH, and his whippersnapper teammate Boy George. Now this is what determines who becomes numero uno in a team. Checo, Sergio Perez missed Q3 for the 3rd consecutive race. After rain during qualifying, forecast for the race was Canada dry, and Max was already sipping and tasting his win number 41. How did the hosts like qualificazione?
Well, once again, you know, quali can be more exciting than the actual Grand Prix. And this was another good one. Changing conditions, tire choices, going to intermediates and going to slicks. You know, we had the whole chaotic package. It's like a Cobb salad. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on here. And it was exciting, I have to admit. And Hülkenberg, I mean, like you said, those rain races in the early 2000s and like A1GP, I mean, it blew people's mind. It was Donington 93. I mean, this guy is so talented and he hasn't even gotten on the podium. It's a big story. It's really a big story. And we need to get this guy on the podium. I don't know what needs to be done. I think everybody needs to get together and say, you know what, let's help Hulky get on the podium because he is such a talented driver. It's interesting to watch Haas and then the penalty. I wish I was in the room with Steiner to see his face when they give him a penalty. I mean, it never ends. And there was a lot of penalties this weekend, Nasser. I don't know what's going on. Every lap, they flash it on the top of the screen. Somebody was being investigated. I mean, do we have that many rogue and terrible drivers in Formula One that we just have to dish them out every race? I mean, is it me? Am I overly sensitive, Nasser?
No, you know, I also get this feeling that, you know, with all these pop-ups that Inspector Crusoe is now the chief steward. Everything will be investigated. And it's just ridiculous, you know. I mean, the only thing that should be investigated, you know, is like a deliberate, complete boneheaded Paul Tracy type move. And even Paul Tracy did not do that all the time. But, you know, he's famous for doing it to Tagliani in San Jose, California. So we make a reference to him. But it's too much, you know. I mean, can you imagine? I think if these same stewards were at the Dijon race in 79, they would have given Arnoux and Villeneuve maybe a two-race ban.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I mean, it's penalties run amok. So I believe, and I'm surprised this could be happening behind the scenes, but we need what we call an intervention with the FIA. Something needs to happen because these people, it's completely, I don't know, I thought the new president would make this a little less, and it's the opposite. I think it's worse than ever. I don't like where the FIA are. I want a new president. I want the whole thing overhauled.
Well, you know, I have an idea. Maybe they should throw a penalty on penalties.
Yeah.
And I have to remind you that things are not the worst they have been in penalties. About 8-10 years ago, it was really, really bad. I mean, just silliness galore. Do you remember the penalty that was given on, I think it was your hombre at Monza?
My favorite Felipe Massa, Fernando Alonso penalty?
Right. You remember that? I mean, how ridiculous was that penalty?
Not only that, but you needed binoculars to see how far the car was, what they called impeding. I mean, that's just a mockery.
Yes. Okay, sir. So shall we move on to the race now?
Por favore.
Okay, this season, Max has only one hurdle to clear. Get a clean start, and then it's das Vidania to all the other drivers. As soon as the lights went out and LCH passed Machismo for second, that was the race result for me, at least as to who the winner will be. With no threat of rain, thunder clouds were never expected from Aston Martin or the new and improved with sideboard W14. What was your take on, did you have a heart attack when Machismo was passed by LCH?
Of course. You know, the ticker is not what he used to be. It gets very bad for me. But I, you know what? I knew that Machismo was calm, cool, and, you know, no crashing. It was all legit. Everybody's happy. Like you said, Max said sayonara. I think they installed cruise control in Max's car. I'm pretty sure. So that way he could relax. You know, these new self-driving cars. It's the future, Nasser. But let's not forget, the excitement for me, the ticker went back into position when Fernando passed Machismo.
Now, I note with interest the words you use for him, cool and calm. So what season did this tradition start?
It's all developed way back in Oviedo.
Okay. I'm assuming post-2007.
2007, weren't we on strike like baseball?
Yeah, something like that. Okay, lap 8, first DNF of the race, your favorite Logan Sargeant resulting in a quick one-lap VSC. Lap 12 was interesting. Max hits a bird and George hits Wall of Voodoo and front runners in the pits. I was very surprised that his Mercedes took a licking and kept on ticking. Later in the race, he was told by the team to retire the car, and this was related to brake issues, we are told. George did sing one of our favorites to the team, "I'm sorry, so sorry."
I'm sorry, so sorry.
Now, both Ferraris got into the top five by staying out. So they can get into the top five if the front runners stop. So that was interesting. Lap 16, back to green, irrational exuberance of LCH or Machismo getting the jump on Max at the restart were quickly put to sweet dreams on Starry Starry Night by the young Dutch master. And that was all she wrote and painted. And I knew if unless there was a rain, there was really no chance of, there's no stopping Verstappen, simple as that. And when no hope was left for victory, Fernando Alonso, the Francisco Goya of Grand Prix racing, gracefully accepted second place finish. Highlight of his race was pouring some sweet maple leaf syrup on his 2007 teammate. Who could that be? And you must have loved that moment, sir.
So exciting, so exciting. And I'm telling you, I love the part where Fernando and Lewis, they're behind Max. We got the restart coming. The pace car goes in. It's awesome stuff. Fernando was doing what Max was doing, going back and forth, but staying tight. And Lewis just said, you know what? I'm not doing nothing but just watching their ass. And it was funny because, yeah, the restart, they did the best they could, but the Red Bull is just too fast. It's gone in a jiffy, but a lot of fun watching those restarts.
I would say one of the Red Bulls is too fast. The other they can contain.
That's true. And he's having problems with pace. He is having what we call a rider's block. I feel sorry for Perez because not only did Max rattle the cage, he shut the door and threw away the key. It's tough. I feel bad for Perez. He was looking so good at just a few races ago.
Well, it's like Bottas winning the first race and everybody's seeing Bottas 2.0. I mean, look who the teammate is. Or it's poor Rubinho, you know.
That's true. We've seen it so many times.
Yes. But what a season Machismo is having. In 2023 so far, he has more podiums than in the previous 7 seasons combined. And Mr. Rogers, I will not be surprised once the season is over and Max has won sweet 16 races that Machismo is voted Driver of the Year by race fans all over the world. As my friend used to say, winning in the best car is great, but winning in a car that has no business is magic. And that's very true, and I truly believe in that. And yes, Machismo has not won a race so far this season, but he is displaying all the marks that show the difference between a very good driver and a great driver. I do not recall Michael Jordan or Tom Brady winning championships by 50 points, but they do enough damage to win big games and be among the GOATs. I am sure if Lance had a teammate other than Alonso, there would be no podium for Scuderia Papa. What say you?
It's so true. And I feel sorry for Lance. And when they interview him, you know, after he's crashed out or DNF'd or had a terrible result, you could tell this is not, I mean, he's a good driver. I'm not saying he's not, but he's just not up at the top of the spear, you know, where the great ones. The podium I thought was super historic, and I hope everybody is absorbing that because this does not happen very often, folks. These are rare moments. We should appreciate, slow down, smell the roses.
Yes, and we're not talking paper roses here. Here is what Machismo had to say after the race. Some of his comments you may want to plug your ears. Here we go.
Yeah, I think it was our most competitive race of the year in terms of pace. We were matching the Red Bulls most of the race, and sometimes, we lost a little bit of pace. At one point, I thought the race was over and second place was good, and then I saw Lewis coming so fast, and it's the last driver you want to see on your mirrors is Lewis Hamilton when he comes fast. But I had a little bit more pace in hand, and at the end he was never in the DRS gap. So yeah, it was good to finish second, but it was like 70 laps of qualifying today. I don't think it was much on it, to be honest. It's a circuit that sometimes you can give up a little bit on entries to have better exits of the corners. So we discussed also before the race that, you know, lift and coast was maybe needed at one point in the race and things like that. So I don't know, I was ready for that, and I don't think it had an impact on the race result. It's good. Everything is good, to be honest. I cannot think of another time in my career that I was, you know, this confident with a team and with the project itself, because, you know, it's more into medium long-term project. I don't know if I will be driving, you know. I always have in my mind that yes, because as long as I feel fast and I still enjoy, why I will stop. But at the moment, I'm enjoying. I think there is more to come. I want to win a race this year. Today, I thought maybe it was possible if Max had a mistake, a bad pit stop or something, but we were a little bit too far to force that error, but the car is going in the right direction, so more opportunities will come.
Now, you know, here at F1 Weekly, we are on the Andy Williams program. We look at life from both sides now, and there are two sides to every record. Pete, I hate to do this to you, but you have thick skin like me. Pete Seeger was asking, where have all the flowers gone? Machismo and his desperados are asking, where have all the championships gone? Lewis and Max have picked them up, every one, and that's where they have gone. But we know the score. Speaking of Lewis, he picked up third place in the race and his third podium of the season. Check this out, Mr. Rogers. Podium number 194 of his career. He got the jump on El Machismo at the start, but Nando returned the favor on lap 22. Later in the race, I thought we may see a close finish between the two, as in Monaco 2007, but Machismo had the comfort of knowing Ron Dennis does not run Aston Martin. Looks like LCH feels the car has a pulse now, and hopefully they can go back to winning ways in the near future and in our lifetime. And after the race, he did say that he was hearing a giant sucking sound in slow corners. So there is some work to be done still in Brackley. But I think they will, as I've said before, turn this Bismarck around and go full steam ahead sooner or later. And that will be great, as I am looking forward to his championship number 9. Make that number 8. I just had an irrational, messy exuberance moment. And you know, Mr. Rogers, your Roscoe is joining the podcast, so I welcome him. Between the podium finishers, we have 176 wins. Isn't that incredible?
It's completely incredible. I mean, when you think about it, it's just... it's mind-boggling, but it's fantastic. This is a good time to be watching Formula One.
Absolutely. Fourth, Charles Leclerc. Hopefully someday in our lifetime also, he will get a break at Scuderia Ferrari. He said, and I quote, "We stayed out during the safety car phase to be able to run in free air because we knew that it would be key for us and our strategy proved to be the right one. We couldn't have done better than P4 today, considering where we started." End quote. His teammate Carlos Sainz Jr. was fifth. The way things are going, I think Prancing Horse will have to wait till next year to see greener pastures. In the post-race interview, Carlito said the pace was there and he could fight for the podium if he had not been given the penalty. Now, the joke on the interweb was people showing Ferrari's new upgrade at the Canadian Grand Prix before the race, and the upgrade was their Le Mans winning car. But you know how excited the whole world is for Ferrari winning Le Mans? And so it's good for Formula One, for Ferrari to be back in winning ways. What say you?
Absolutely. We always want Ferrari to win because it's good for everybody in the world. Everybody loves Ferrari, and they, you know, the history, the je ne sais quoi. Not only that, but Piero Ferrari was at Canada. And Canada and Italy have an interesting link because of the immigration, the little Italy in Montreal. It's fascinating, but they love each other over there. So what we hate to see is a talented young man like Leclerc not get what he wants. Sort of like the Fernando years, stuck in a crappy team with GP2 engine. So these things happen. Bear with it. It's just part of F1.
Yeah, I do have a question. Whatever happened to that GP2 engine?
It's a winner.
Despite him. And I was thinking today, what does Zach Brown and Alonso think now? Why did we let them go?
They cry in their beer every day.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Well, I hope Honda left a lot of sake so they can drown their tears in sake. At least something they kept Japanese. But anyway, these things happen. Okay, sir, moving forward. Sergio Perez was sixth. Sergio's situation reminds me of a song from Boss Cags. Going down one time, going down two time. I'm drowning in a sea of love. One of your favorites, I assume?
Love it.
Same here. the sea of love that Red Bull has for Max Verstappen, and who can blame them? Checo needs to have what they call in the aviation business, spatial awareness. Don't assume you're flying high when reality is your flight of fantasy is going down. The ground proximity warning system at Red Bull is not continuous high-pitched beeps, but it's Dr. Marcos Machetti. Chop, chop, and you are out of the program. But he recently did come out saying that his seat is not in danger. These are all talk, talk. We'll see what happens. But, you know, reality is very simple. Ricciardo could not handle the heat. He left the kitchen. The only two people who can really give Max a run for the money, you know who they are. They were also on the podium, by the way. Otherwise, nobody on the grid today is going to do. They're going to have the same fate as Albon and Kvyat and other clowns. What say you?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but it makes Max's win so much sweeter when he looks to the left, looks to the right, and it's they're world champions and he just beat them because he has the package. Trust me, Max knows that podium is sweet. His father knows that podium was really historically machismo. So, no, it's a great time for Max. Max is a lucky man because, you know, sometimes...
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. So we have two lucky drivers now in Formula One?
We do. Not only that, but he knows. You know, it's good to have winning in a period of time where you do have some great drivers that you're fighting against, even though they don't have the package. But like I said, when you're on the podium and you've got a Fernando and a Lewis Hamilton next to you, you know you're doing pretty good.
I feel like I'm on a plane which has lost pressurization and they have lowered the oxygen mask. When you said he's lucky, oh, I'm so glad we have two lucky drivers now. And I was waiting. How many races he had to win before you call him lucky? And you know what? You have to be lucky to win. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I'll have more on this a little bit later, but Max is, just like Lewis and Alonso, a super incredible talent. And, you know, when you're winning and dominating the way he is, we have to just suck it up and enjoy it, whether we like the driver or not. To me, that's, you know, it's just like the Schumacher era. I was never a Schumi fan, but I just could not believe what I was seeing. But I had to accept it. So, you know, we do respect these things. Okay, sir, but Checo did record the fastest lap of the race. And, you know, we have some comments later in the show from your Monsieur Le Professor, and that will really put the whole Checo-Max situation out in the open. Alexander Albon, gentleman you alluded to earlier in the podcast, he was seventh, getting a lot of kudos for doing only one stop. Any comment on that, sir?
Well, it was a great drive. It was a controlled drive. He's very good. You could see, and not only that, but you could see he's hungry for the team. He's trying to really, really do the best he can to show Williams is making progress. Because I could tell he's a team player. I don't know where Logan Sargeant is. I mean, honestly, I really don't think he belongs in Formula One. I think maybe he got pushed into it too quickly. But please, let's get somebody else in that seat to help Williams get some points.
Have you noticed how good drivers do when they are Max-free?
That's true. All of a sudden, the monkey is off the shoulder. The chip. They lose the chip.
Oh! Yeah. Oh, very good, very good. If you lose the chip, you go faster. I like that. Okay, Ocon. You know, you're talking about Logan Sargeant. I have to disagree with you. Agree and disagree. The problem is, you know, everybody... And fans like myself and you, we all have such high expectation that when a driver comes in, he has to hit the ground running in Formula One. Unfortunately, that's what the F1 reality is, okay? But I do recall, and it was not too long ago when Mr. Charles Leclerc arrived in Sauber, that he was struggling in the first few races. And I remember very well me saying on one of the podcasts that maybe he's not the talent we thought. So how wrong we all can be. But Logan Sargeant, his retirement was, I don't think, his fault. He did not hit the wall like George. But I think they need to give him some time without any pressure. You know, it really makes no sense to talk to a young driver like Flavio Briatore used to talk to Nelson Piquet Jr. Remember him? Telling the guy getting in the cockpit, you better score some points or it's over. That's not nice.
I'm sorry. I'm old school. I am not as sensitive as you are, Nasser.
I have to agree with you on this, in the sense that he has to pick up the pace, picante sauce, make it tasty for himself and the team. And he did very well. In, you know, he's a karting champion. He fought. I'll tell you how good this kid is. He fought for the F3 championship against Oscar Piastri going into the final round. Okay, and he was very impressive in his rookie season in Formula 2. So the guy is good. He has the talent. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And I think that's where most drivers, FTD, fail to deliver. So let's see what happens. Well, I'm happy for him that he is with an American-owned team. And I'm hoping that they would give him the opportunity to make himself worthy of being in Formula 1. So we'll find out pretty soon. But the problem he's going to run into, you know, if Toto Wolff knocks on the door and tells Doralton Capital, which is located in the capital markets, New York City, now I have, you know, free engines plus $12 million, and I want Mick Schumacher in the team. I mean, that will do the dishes for Logan Sargeant, I think. Okay, I don't know if I mentioned this, but Esteban Ocon, only Alpine in the points, 8. And this is my favorite, Lance Stroll, solid 9th when his teammate was 2nd. Good to have friends and family in high places. Bottas, final point from 10th for the Alfa Romeo Sauber team. And Mr. Rogers, when all is said and done, Scuderia Ferrari has won Canadian Grand Prix 12 times. Half of those wins came courtesy of one driver, you know who, Michael Schumacher. He actually won one time with Benetton also, and he and your favorite Lewis, Carl Hamilton, have 7 wins each in Canada. So that's very, very impressive. Any final thoughts on the Grand Prix du Canada?
I do have some final thoughts. So they did this weird, they call it a Manning cast, and they were trying to emulate what Monday Night Football did with a separate coverage of the Formula One race with Ricciardo commenting, and they had Patrick Dempsey, who really, I was just embarrassed and shocked. I listened to that for a little bit. I could not take it. These people were so terrible. Nasser, if it was you and I, we would have kicked ass. I mean, these people were so terrible. They were talking about somebody's mom. I couldn't handle it. I had to go back to our favorite, Martin Brundle, doing a fantastic job as usual, and the entire staff. And of course, what I liked was Danica Patrick was there. Man, she is in it. She's hot, and it's interesting. So I was surprised that they did that dual coverage. Didn't like it. Don't do it again. And I love Canada. I think it's a great Grand Prix, great race.
Yeah, I heard about this telecast that you're talking about, but I did not listen to it. I'm not into those things, to be honest with you. Like you said, I'm old school. I like the real thing.
Me too.
Okay, sir. So let's take a look at the championship situation. Drivers, surprise, Max Verstappen, 6 wins out of 8 races, so he's leading with 195 points. Sergio Perez, 2nd, 126. And 3rd is Fernando Alonso with 117 points. Now, I'm not seeking any happiness from anybody losing their job, but man, if Fernando Alonso in an Aston Martin finish ahead of a car where the other car has won the world championship in dominating fashion, then there needs to be a knock on the door of Senor Perez's residence from the Western Union man, and you know what he brings. Western Union man does not bring good news normally.
That's going to be a big decision for Lawrence Stroll. When we go off season, he realizes that Lance is a sweet, wonderful child, but he needs somebody in there that's a little more machismo.
So Max 1st, Sergio Perez 2nd on 126, Alonso 3rd, 117, Lewis Hamilton 4th, 102 points, 5th is Carlos Sainz Jr., 68 points, his teammate Charles Leclerc is 7th on 54 points. Now, 2 drivers remain pointless after 8 races. AlphaTauri's Nyck de Vries. Some are calling him Nyck Defired. So, you know. I mean, there is humor and brutality, and it's at least funny. And Williams driver from Boca Raton, FLA, Mr. Your favorite Logan Sargeant, he is also without any point. so far this season. So, and in the Constructors' Championship, boy, has one steamroller here, Mannheim Steamroller from Milton Keynes, Red Bull, 321 points. Mercedes second, 167 points. Aston Martin, 154. Ferrari, fourth, 122. And Alpine has Lewis Hamilton's number, 44 points. But one thing we have to agree, that zero sideboard concept really did not work, despite one victory. What say you?
It's really simple. You just ask the best designer. But yeah, who's talking about retiring soon, because it's got to be on his horizon. He's done it all. So yes, zero side pod is stinko, and I don't even think it's very attractive. And you know what they say, if it looks fast, it is fast. And the zero side pod, it just looked clumsy. It didn't have that certain sexy je ne sais quoi.
The only question remaining now, we all know the GP2 engine is capable of doing, and so is the driver, but will Red Bull win each and every race of this season? What say you?
I think they will, unless something's got to happen. And that to make that happen, we need Checo at the front, and we need some kind of disaster at Red Bull, similar to Spain 2016, for El Machismo to take over and just go pound on that door. It will be exciting. It will happen. I think Checo is going to get more frustrated, because now he realizes that the championship will never happen in his lifetime. And we'll see what happens. And reliability. I mean, eventually we do have DNFs. The chapel is not visited like it used to be back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Now, man, these things are all Honda Civics. It's just ridiculous. But that's the way it is. But we will get a DNF. And I think Red Bull might be pushing the envelope a little bit. We hope for that, because we want to see at least a couple of different winners this season.
And you know, as we have seen, Fernando Alonso finds a way to come to the podium and finish second. And normally in sports, winners find a way to win something. And I'm still very convinced that Alonso, it will need some help, like you said, you know, Spain 2016 or rain or whatever. But I'm still convinced that he will find a way to win a race. And that will be a day that motorsports fan will remember forever.
Absolutely. It's going to be another historical great moment in our lifetime, and a well-deserved one, where everybody in the world, like you said, are probably going to vote Fernando the driver of the season, because he's so ridiculously cool. I mean, you can't touch it. It's awesome.
Okay, MC Hammer.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Shall we take a break now?
And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Fisichella, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Let's start today with the first of our two Texas two steps. At the Detroit IndyCar race recently, I was able to have a chat with both drivers from AJ Foyt's team, thanks to their PR person, Ms. Marie Fornoro. The team, owned by one of the great legends of IndyCar racing, is based in a town called Waller, Texas. Here is our conversation with Santino Ferrucci. And I would like to thank him for his time. And Santino, if you may recall, raced in Formula 3 and also, in, I believe, he did some time in Formula 2. So please enjoy the conversation, and we shall return. Okay, folks, I'm here in Detroit with one young, fast American talent, Mr. Santino Ferrucci. Santino, how are you today?
Yeah, doing good. Just a long day at the track, just trying to figure out some things with the damper program, and hopefully we'll have it sorted for tomorrow. So, just a learning process.
Very strong run for you at the Brickyard. Very, very impressive. Some are happy and some are not happy about the last red flag. What say you?
I think IndyCar did the right thing with how they restarted the race. I said that when I got out of the car. To finish under green for the fans is definitely the way to go. For me, it didn't really have... honestly, the only thing that affected my race in the end was the timing of when they threw it. If they throw it a couple seconds later, I start restarting second as opposed to third. So them going red and restarting the race really just gave me another shot at potentially winning it instead of just staying under yellow.
When you're trying to win the biggest race in the world going into corners over 200 miles per hour, do you ever even think about the walls there?
No. I didn't even think about that. No, it's cool, though. It's definitely a unique race with its own unique challenges.
Absolutely. Okay, what were your pre-race expectations at Indy this year?
I always thought we'd be really good, especially after Wednesday when we rolled out of the trailer. Everything just seemed solid. The car had a lot of raw speed. I think the biggest shock, honestly, was how well we were able to qualify. For me, it's qualifying in Indy's never been fantastic, but racing there's been really good. So, yeah, just kind of always knew that we were going to be in it to win it in the end. I didn't realize that we were going to end up having one of the best cars and not win the race.
Yes. Your background is mostly road racing. You race in Europe quite a bit. You look very speedy and comfy at Indy. How long it took to get used to high-speed ovals?
I don't have any oval racing. My first oval race was the 2019 Indy 500, where we finished seventh. I think just having the mindset of how to get through the race was huge, but I've been really comfortable on the ovals basically since I started with them. I mean, after Indy, we went to Texas, finished fourth, went to Gateway, finished fourth, went to Pocono, finished fourth. So, my first oval win is still elusive, but we'll get there, I'm sure.
Did you ever employ a coach, driver coach, for oval racing?
No. I've had some really good people working around us. So my spotter was Pancho Carter. And then obviously my first rookie year was Michael Cannon, which is our now technical director here at AJ Foyt Racing. So just having the right people was, I think, enough. So, no, Pancho. First year. Pancho Carter, yep.
Okay, speaking of AJ, quite an American original and legend. According to the team brochure, which I have here, your favorite music is Everything But Country. Does AJ know about this?
Probably not. I don't know if he's read the brochure. So, I'd probably keep it away from him.
Yeah, good idea. Okay, you made your IndyCar debut in this city 5 years ago. Happy where your career is today? And apart from great performances at Indy, what other moments have special memories for you from IndyCar racing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously my starting here was really awesome. Doing my 50th start here is pretty awesome. My rookie year was phenomenal with some of the races that we had. But yeah, no, I think where I am is definitely... There was a journey to get here. I'm very happy in the 14 car and hopefully plan to stay here for quite a while.
Only thing missing is Copenhagen sponsorship.
Yeah. Maybe some alcohol.
There you go. Okay, as a racing driver, what do you enjoy more, hustling in the streets of Long Beach and St. Pete and Detroit here, or going flat out at places like Road America?
I prefer the street races more so than the road races, just with the element of passing and the type of racing that you have to have. So I do think that our racetracks here in America, though, our permanent street track or permanent road tracks are very nice because they have a lot of character to what we're used to racing, or what I grew up racing formula cars with, which were glorified parking lots. So to see, the fact that we go to real racetracks is pretty awesome.
What was your favorite track in Europe and favorite track here in the U.S.?
My favorite track in Europe, probably Spa, oh, yeah. I want to say. And then here in America, I want to say I really am a huge fan of Iowa. Some of the short tracks were a lot of fun. I really loved Belle Isle. To be racing now in downtown Detroit, it's a little different.
Having raced in Europe many years and now racing here for quite a few years, is there a difference in racing culture and especially depth of talent on both sides of the pond?
Yeah, I think the racing culture is massively different here. Everybody's much more friendly. Everyone wants to help out. It's, you're actually a team, which is really fun. So you get to know everybody really well. And it's just very, very different mentally. Everybody's actually happy and they enjoy their jobs here, which is nice. As far as depths of talent goes, I mean, I think you've seen a lot of great talents come over from Europe and struggle here. I think that IndyCar is definitely the most competitive series as far as talent goes in the world on an average scale. So I think that also the car has a lot to do with that. You know, everyone's driving something rather similar. The biggest differences are suspension components. But even then, your top teams to your bottom teams are always within a couple of seconds.
In 2021, you became a Toyota development driver. How was your NASCAR experience with Sam Hunt Racing? And what made you come back to IndyCar Racing?
Yeah, so I mean, I loved my time in Xfinity, and especially with Sam Hunt and Toyota. I mean, they were such great, one great team, the other one great manufacturer, super helpful with me being a young driver in the NASCAR stuff. But honestly, opportunity is kind of what brought me back to IndyCar, on top of the fact that I think that even though I did really well in the Xfinity starts, I am a better open wheel racer.
Now, when you were racing in Formula 3 in Europe, I was watching a NASCAR race, beginning show, and Tony Stewart gave you a nice plug. How do you know Smoke?
So I've known Tony since he came over, Lewis Hamilton had came over to do the seat swap with McLaren. Yep, I was there for that. So that's how I ended up meeting Tony, because I was doing some stuff with McLaren in England for go-karts and training. And yeah, I stayed in touch with him, and I went out to a bunch of races as a little kid to NASCAR events with Tony in the SHR, and no, it was a lot of fun. And funny enough, I ended up driving a NASCAR for Toyota at the other SHR, Sam Hunt Racing.
Yeah. Okay, you were associated with Haas F1 team for a few years. Was there ever any chance of racing in Formula One for them?
Probably not. I think you know, the way that this series was run, the way that the team operates, it was a Ferrari B team when I was there, so Ferrari had a lot of control over who they put in the car, and I wasn't a Ferrari development driver. I was at Haas because partly we did really well in some of our European races, but I was also the only American, and you can't have the American team without an American driver. So, no, it was helpful, but, you know, I think it was very clear, as much as the series said that you need an American, that wasn't happening in my time while I was over there, and just the politics of it, just no interest in playing their games.
Okay, last question. If you have a choice, what will you take, victory in the Indy 500 or winning the IndyCar Championship?
I think everyone's going to tell you the Indy 500.
Actually, everyone tells me the reverse, which I'm shocked.
What? They tell you the what?
They want to win the championship, which I'm shocked. I mean, Indy 500 is so big.
I'd rather win the Indy 500 five times than the championship 10 times.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Very nice meeting you.
Pleasure to meet you, too. Thank you.
Santino, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Yes, sir. Moving forward, we go to Germany. MotoGP at Sachsenring. It was a doozy on Ducati. Jorge Martin held off a charging Paco Bagnaia to take victory. Margin of victory was 0.06. Martin also won the sprint race. Your fellow French rider, Johann Zarco, was third. Ducati took top five positions. If only they could share the secret of their success with another Italian team racing on four wheels and just down the road from Bologna in Maranello. Marc Marquez did not start the race after crashing five times during the weekend, including Sunday morning warm-up session. Marc is like Max, an incredible racing talent. Like Lewis and Machismo, he has nothing to prove. I really think he should join the Spanish AARP and enjoy his life without risking it any further on two wheels, because he's had numerous crashes in the last few years. Now we go IndyCar racing from one of the best tracks in this country and overall anywhere in the world, Road America in Elkhart Lake in Cheese Country, and that would be Wisconsin. Alex Palou was the winner and leads the championship. The way things are going for him at Ganassi Racing, he may do a JB on Zach Brown and say, "I signed with you, but I'm staying here." Time will tell. Now we come to the Formula 2 of IndyCar racing, Indy Next or Indy NXT, previously known as Indy Lights. First five races had five different winners. No Max here, but Road America produced fine American cheese
in Nolan Siegel.
Hi, I'm Nolan Siegel, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
This teenager, we interviewed him recently. He is from Northern California, and he is the first winner and a future star in the making. I think he's 18 years old. I consider him to be future poster boy of Penske Racing. That good. USF Pro 2000, which is equivalent to like Formula 3 here. Penske supported Miles Rowe, did not win a race over the weekend, but extended his championship lead. So that's good for him, and we've interviewed him a couple of times in the recent past. Next we come to, this was of much interest to me, Dr. Marco doing a Nancy on Max, Just Say No. Sebastian Vettel is going back to the team which took him to 4 championships in a row. This time he will drive a Red Bull at the Nürburgring Nordschleife, or in plain simple English, the 14.2-mile version of the Green Hill. Max was interested in doing this, but fearing he would go to the Max to find the limits of the car, which is the only way Max drives, Dr. Marco presented Max with a Hall & Oates 45 featuring Can't Go For That, No Can Do. And now we come to something of our interest we talked about earlier. Not that we are enjoying this, but it's main news in motorsports these days. Prost pouncing on Papa Perez. Le professor and 4-time world champion Alain Prost has put some spicy escargot in Checo's aspirations to beat Max and becoming world champion, calling it an almost impossible mission. And who can disagree with the professor? According to Prost, Checo's Papito is making the mission harder. Señor Antonio Perez said last winter that Checo will not return to Mexico without being world champion, and compared the Perez-Max battle this season with the fierce rivalry between Ayrton Senna and Prost. Prost said, and I quote, "First of all, Perez should not shout so loudly that he wants to beat Max. Last month I read that his father told the media that the fight between Perez and Max is comparable to the fight I had with Ayrton. That is pointless and actually only counterproductive." End quote. I think Professor is preaching the right course. Checo may be Dan Quayle of Formula One, smart and successful, but he is no JFK of GP. What say you, Senator Rogers?
Okay, the question is, can you spell potato, Nasser? And second, I think Monsieur Prost is absolutely correct. Completely the wrong approach. I don't see a Senna and Prost rivalry at all. I'm sorry. I see more Schumacher-Irvine, Schumacher-Rubinho. So, folks, why don't we maybe go horse racing? Maybe we need to find a 4-legged Checo to help him out a little bit.
There you go, sir. And you know, when Max won his 40th race, which was at the previous race, Spanish Grand Prix, this is obviously no comparison, but just some numbers, you know. The age at each driver got his 40th Grand Prix win. Max was 25, Seb was 27, LCH was 30, Michael Schumacher was 31, Prost was 35, and Senna 33. Checo has just the bad luck of a Gerhard Berger against Senna, Rubinho against Schumacher, Covey against Lewis Hamilton, and our favorite, Fisico, looking for where is the winning car. So it's just one of those things. I mean, Checo has done very well, and I have a lot of respect for how he has applied himself to his craft, and I respect him for that, but I just cannot see this guy beating, or anyone, to be honest with you, except for one or two on the grid today, beating Max in a fair fight throughout the season. And now the problem is, in the old days, in the 70s, 80s, if we have 13, 14 races, if you drop out of 2 races because cars are not very reliable, your teammate can get a big advantage, or your rival. I am convinced right now, even if Max does not finish in the top 4 in the next 4 races and somebody else takes the championship lead, as long as the package is what it is today, he will still win the championship. Okay, sir, now we come to, speaking of Max, we come to motorsports mantra. Just my thought on this. By the end of the 2025 season, Max will have more than 70 wins at the rate he's going, and he will still be a couple of years away from turning 30 years old, and that's very scary. Looking ahead to new regulations in 2026,
I have a feeling we will see a regime change. Mercedes may return to glory days and winning ways. It could be Ferrari also, but I say watch out for Aston Martin powered by Honda. Lawrence Stroll has very deep pockets, team has a brand new factory, and Honda is fully committed to Formula One instead of doing a Engelbert Humperdinck. Moving on, sir, we come to, this was interesting. Some deliver beer by Clydesdales, Jeremy Clarkson delivered by Lamborghini. Did you read this news item, sir?
Of course, I thought it was cool. It's definitely his brand of beer, so he's definitely not stupid. He's self-promoting. But yeah, this is a great, great thing. He delivered the beer at Alpine, and everybody had a really good time.
Yes, they say Monday, can't trust that day. Well, he may be out of top gear, but Mr. Jeremy Clarkson is still a top man and kept his promise. What he did was, he is doing a farming documentary on Amazon TV, which I have not seen, but he promised on Twitter to buy everyone a pint of his locally produced beer if Esteban Ocon finished on the podium at last month's Monaco Grand Prix. He fulfilled a promise and then showed up on Monday on a Lamborghini tractor laden with 1,000 beers. And you know, Lamborghini basically was a tractor manufacturer when he got pissed off at Enzo and started his sports car company. So that was very interesting. Do you think they were able to finish the 1,000 beers same day?
No, they got them all in the fridge. Some of them are signed by Jeremy. They'll save those for eBay. It's just a lot of laughs.
That's good. Now we come to our second interview of the day. This is with Danish-born American racing talent Benjamin Peterson. He graduated to IndyCar racing this season after a successful junior series career. And I would like to thank him for his time. And please enjoy this chit-chat, also recorded in Detroit.
Okay, folks, I am here in Detroit, and this morning we have a Danish treat, Mr. Benjamin Peterson. Benjamin, good to meet you. How are you?
Good. Very excited for race day.
May has been a merry month for you. Your team owner, Mr. A.J. Foyt, was the fastest rookie back in 1958, and this year you did the same with fastest lap ever by a rookie. How nerve-wracking is qualifying for the Indy 500, not just for the speed, but for the intensity of the event also?
It's very special. I wouldn't say it was nerve-wracking. I knew we had a very good car, so I was actually very calm and more so just hungry to show what we are capable of. And it was, just an amazing experience and amazing month.
I'm surprised you said it was not nerve-wracking. How about going inches away from the wall at 200 miles per hour? Is that nerve-wracking?
No, it's pretty much been my whole career, just at different speeds throughout. So I feel very comfortable doing it, and I love it.
Great. Now, this was your first visit to the Brickyard. Were you surprised that you were able to qualify as high as row 4, which obviously is very impressive?
I wouldn't say surprised. I just feel very fortunate that we were able to have such a good car. I knew it. If we have a good car, then I'm definitely capable of being up at the front with that. So, very special feeling as a rookie to be able to have that good of a car right away, for sure. But I know I'm capable of it, so it was expected, I would say, with our performance.
Okay, talking about good car, there's so much technology now in racing. How much of it is input from the driver and how much from the team and the mechanics to make it go fast?
It's everyone. It's my feedback, taking that feedback and, translating it to what the engineers see on data and then fine-tuning it from there. So it's a full team effort, for sure.
Being named Rookie of the Year for this year's 500, does it make up for not seeing the checkered flag?
Yes, I more so see the whole month. It was just a very special month. I wouldn't say it necessarily makes up for it. We made it into the fast 12 in qualifying. We had the fast ever rookie lap. So I think those things aside made the month very special. And for sure, the Rookie of the Month made it even better. But we had already achieved so many great things. So and the collision at the end was not at all my responsibility, so can't really do anything about it and just head high. And it was a great month all around.
Okay, we are now in Detroit for a street race. What kind of tracks you enjoy most, high speed ovals, street circuits,
or Purple Spirit tracks like Road America and Laguna Seca?
I like them all. That's my honest answer. They're all very different, but I enjoy all of them.
Okay. IndyCar is very competitive field. What kind of championship position at the end of the season are you shooting for?
I mean, it's an ever-changing target. Every weekend we've gotten better and better. This week we're very close to top 15 in qualifying. So right now the big goal is trying to consistently get into top 15, which for us as a team is a huge accomplishment. Then the next stage, you know, is making it into the fast 12 and going from there. So it's an ever-changing target, and it always will be. If you're consistently top 3, then the next target is always to win. So it's an ever-changing target.
Here is my favorite question for all IndyCar drivers. What is more important to you, winning the 500 or the IndyCar Championship?
Both.
If there was a choice?
Both.
Okay, that's fine. I was surprised a lot of drivers said winning the championship because Indy is such a big thing, you know. Okay, how exciting was winning at Silverstone in British Formula 3?
That was a very special experience. That is the track, in my opinion, in England. And yeah, I wish IndyCar could go there, to be honest, just with how cool the track is, if you could somehow move that track over here. But yeah, to do that in British F3 was very special.
Winning is never easy. Having raced on both sides of the pond, what is more challenging, to win here or in Europe?
It's equal. I mean, especially here in IndyCar now, the drivers are the best of the best. And it's, you know, a lot of them have been in Europe and come over here. So it's completely different comparison from junior Formula to IndyCar. I mean, there's guys in IndyCar now that literally have 20 more years of experience than I do. When you're competing against guys of that level and that experience, that's obviously very challenging. But I feel very confident with where I'm at and where my progression has been.
In your Formula 4 days, you won all three races at Circuit of the Americas. What is your impression of that track?
It's awesome. Still some of my best memories from junior Formula. I know IndyCar used to race there. It'd be awesome to come back with such an amazing facility. And yeah, it just brings back great memories. That was very special. Obviously, F4 is the beginning level, and to do it in front of Formula 1 and WEC was very special at that age.
Of all the years you have raced in single-seaters, was that a particular season where you felt you developed the most as a racing driver?
Just every year, pretty equally, I would say. You know, some years, I mean, you're learning all the time, so every year has been very equal, in my opinion, in terms of importance for development.
Amongst all the drivers you have raced in junior Formula, not talking IndyCars up to this time, who have been very good competition for you and drivers you respect as fast drivers?
Yeah, that's easy. The first one I've raced him since F4 is Kyle Kirkwood. He's always been super talented. We're very close friends, and really the only driver that we've literally almost done every same series until IndyCar. So that's an easy answer.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Okay, can you tell us a little bit about your karting days and high moments from your karting life?
Yeah, I didn't have the same traditional karting background that most drivers did. Really, my most serious, you know, form of getting into racing was starting in F4 and really the first step of car racing, and then from there just learned so much. So I actually think it's benefited me in many ways, because you see a lot of guys that are fast in karting try to make the transition and they aren't really able to, just because it's so embedded, the karting style. But that was my transition, and now we're here. So
you're working as a driver coach also. Can you tell us a little bit what that entails in terms of teaching people how to drive cars?
I'm not working as a driver coach. I did a little bit of help in junior Formula, but not anymore.
Not anymore?
Yeah.
Okay. I understand Lewis Hamilton is your favorite driver. Question is, will he get championship number 8 before Alonso gets championship number 3?
Not as it is right now, no.
So you think Alonso will get 3 first?
I don't think either of them will, as long as Verstappen's on the grid and in a Red Bull.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's very true. Finally, will you tell our listeners about your social media website so they can follow your career?
Yeah, at Benjamin Peterson 55, I think it is, _55. Yeah, my website, BenjaminPeterson.com, and then obviously IndyCar for all IndyCar feeds,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Okay. No worries.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Benjamin, thanks for joining F1 Weekly NASCAR.com. Throwing it back at you, Ness.
Thank you, sir. And finally, we go back to the Canadian Grand Prix and look back at some what you call old memories. The Canadian Grand Prix has seen action in three different locations, two Francais and one Anglais. The first F1 race north of the border took place in 1967 at Mossport Park near Toronto. It is now called Canadian Tire Motorsports Park or something like that. Jack Brabham won in his car while Dan Gurney finished third in his car. Second race was at Mont Tremblant Circuit in Saint-Jean and was won by Kiwi Danny Hulme. Fellow Kiwi Bruce McLaren was second, third was Checo of the day, Pedro Rodriguez. And this circuit, I am not sure, but at one time was owned by Lawrence Stroll and is absolutely gorgeous, just like his son's driving. And that's me trying to talk like Nando. Did you hear him say any praises this weekend, by the way? I missed out on that.
No, he ran out of praises. I think the best stuff was the relationship between Fernando and LCH on the podium. You saw the love. And, you know, there's so much history. Those guys know each other so well. I can't wait till they retire and the books come out. It's going to be awesome.
Yes. You know, like you have deleted 2007 season when Lewis, when they are both hanging out on a beach in Brazil, and Lewis says, "Hey, do you remember the 2007 Hungarian Grand Prix?" And he's going to do a Clark Rogers. No, that's deleted from my memory bank. I will say this, if there is one guy who knows how good Lewis Hamilton is, it's not Alexander Prema, who was his teammate in GP2, it's Fernando Alonso. And with that, we're going to move on. Roger Penske entered a private McLaren in the 1971 Canadian Grand Prix at Mossport, and his driver, Mark Donohue, finished on the podium in his first F1 race. Jackie Stewart was the winner with Ronnie Peterson second. The 1973 race is notable for two things. First use of safety car in Formula One and the chaos created by the rain. Peter Revson was declared the winner. Lewis Hamilton, Robert Kubica and Daniel Ricciardo all had their first wins here. In 2011, I believe it was, JB came back to win on the final lap after a wee bit of a mistake by Seb. And this was a scene recreated on foot by F1 Weekly webmaster Toby Dawes and myself on our visit to the track a few years ago. The current location is on man-made island, Île Notre Dame, and first race here was won by local lad Gilles Villeneuve in 1978. His Ferrari teammate Carlos Reutemann was also on the podium. The race now may be in French-speaking part of Canada, but it has not been kind to French drivers. Both Jean-Pierre Jabouille and Olivier Panis broke their legs here. Any comment on the Canadian history, sir, before we go to our musical mondial?
Well, all I have to say is Expo 67.
Exactly, and that's what brought the Grand Prix there. Okay, sir, finally we come to musical mondial. Race was in Canada, so music is from north of the border. Here is the Orchestra of Percy Faith and theme from A Summer Place, one of my all-time favorites. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy.
But the love we had was going strong. Through the good and bad we get along. And then the flame of love died in your eyes. My heart was broken too when you said goodbye.